10, 15.
Back upfield to the 35, to the 40, 45, 50.
Pass the 50.
35, 40.
Pass the 30.
To the 20.
Inside the 20.
You got to be kidding me.
To the 10.
Whoa! He scores!
He's all the way home.
The no flags!
Oh, my God. Oh, goodness. Holy moly.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
One of the greatest upsets in sports history.
Hello again, everyone. This is the Old College Try. This is your host, Tim Hyland, and joining me as always is my co-host, Mike Unger. Mike, I had quite a weekend. How about you?
I had such a great weekend, Tim, because I did not leave my house for the first time in weeks, if not months. I had no plans. It was glorious. Watched the O's game and some incredible tennis up on the roof Friday night, beautiful weather. Watched a ton of college football on Saturday from start to finish. It was tremendous, but I can't wait to hear about your trip to State College.
I'll get there in a second, though, but hold on. Like, did you not even leave the house to go to Mahaffey's?
No, did not go to a bar. It was money-saving and resting weekend. After traveling to Europe and Indiana and three straight weekends on the road, it was great. Went home on Sunday to do some family things, but other than that, no, not even Mahaffey's, Timmy.
Did you spoil yourself with any kind of unhealthy ordering food?
Well, we kind of went all out. I made a beer can chicken on Friday night.
Always a hit.
And then I smoked some wings in the smoker on Saturday since we had all day. And it was really nice out. And those came out just tremendous.
Perfect. Sounds like a nice weekend, Mike.
It was glorious. I wish they were all like that, kind of.
So we went, of course, to see our oldest son, Jack, freshman at Penn State. Left here at 3. Mike, you've traveled to Penn State back in the old days before the road improvements to State College. Remember all those single lane roads we had to suffer through in Harrisburg and the rest of it?
I do. I did that several times.
And that's all been fixed since now. It's a much better drive.
Oh, good. Good to hear.
No backups at all. So we got there in 3 hours flat, which is pretty good. Had dinner at the hotel. We stayed at the new hotel right in a golf course, Mike. It's a very pretty location, right in the mountains.
I bet noted listener Dave has already played that golf course.
Probably. It's about 10-15 minutes from the stadium, which is not bad at all. So just relax Friday night. I told Aaron I was nervous. I was like, yeah, I want to be up and out early. And I was kind of hedging my bets. She was like, all right, what time do you want to leave? And I thought she would be against the idea of leaving early. I was like, well, I'd like to leave at least by 9. And she's like, I'm thinking 8. I'm like, okay.
Ooh, nice little bonus there.
So we were up and out by 8. I think I said last week, everything's changed. So I was grumbling about how you had to buy parking pass in advance. And I had sweating out. I had to order from someone in God knows where. And they sent it via UPS. But I will say, when everyone has a parking pass and knows where they're going and there's no paying at the lot, things go very swimmingly, Mike. There was no backup at the parking lot either. You just pulled right in. It was perfect.
I wonder if that's kind of an outgrowth of COVID too, where it's like, hey, we're not collecting anything on the scene. I know a lot of things are like that now.
It worked very well. So we were in the lot by 8:15, had a pretty decent spot, tailgated, made some breakfast food. Jack and his buddies came over, went into the game. On the way into the game, we wanted to get, of course, a photo in front of the stadium with the whole family. And we asked this one guy, I'm like, hey, do you mind taking a photo? And he's like, no, not at all. And he took a few photos. He's like, by the way, I'm Nick Singleton's coach. I was like, what? He's like, I was Nick Singleton's high school coach. And Nick Singleton was, if you don't know, the Gatorade Player of the Year last year, the National Gatorade Player of the Year, star tailback. And he was the nicest guy. And I'm like, hey, how is he a kid? He's like, the nicest kid you would meet. Just a really good kid. Nick had a huge game, 10 carries, 179 yards. 10 carries, Mike, 179 yards, 2 touchdowns.
That's pretty good average. I'm not a mathematician, but that sounds like a pretty good average.
He had a 78-yard touchdown, a 45-yard touchdown, another 45-yard gain. It was pretty impressive stuff.
Against that vaunted Ohio U defense?
Yeah, definitely. But that was pretty cool. And the game, the weather was perfect, not too hot. We were pretty far up in the upper reaches of Beaver Stadium, Mike, so the sun was pretty brutal. But the game was fun. I mean, it was no contest from the start, basically. I will say one minor complaint, or not a minor complaint. I'm sitting there, and it's been a while since I've been, not to a college game, but to a Penn State game. And this was on, I think this was like the ESPN or Fox, like for some reason, it was like the main noon game. Mike, between the endless reviews of almost every play, the commercial break, I mean, it was painful. And I was thinking like, okay, this is pretty bad at the stadium, where I'm looking at my younger ones. Like Jack, of course, is into it. He doesn't care. But like, you know, the next generation of fans that like college football needs to like get is, in theory, Anna, Leah, and Joey. And believe me, like less than a quarter in, they're like, why are we sitting here where nothing is happening? Nothing. It was pretty bad. My dad texted me during the game. He's like, this is awful. I'm like, oh, it's bad on TV too. He's like, oh, it's terrible. It was a perfect storm of like a lot of reviews and a lot of commercial breaks.
Reviews will do it. They need to take a page out of baseball's book.
Yeah, just
get some new rules.
Just get rid of it entirely anyway. At one point, so I was sitting next to Leah, and I'm like, Leah, do you want to know the most powerful person in that field? She's like, who? I'm like, see the guy in the red shirt standing next to the referee in the middle of the field? She's like, yeah. I'm like, you know what his job is? She's like, no. Like, it's his job to tell the referee when they can start playing again, because he's the guy talking to the TV folks when commercials are over.
And once it is funny when you're at the game, how often you stare at that person and wait for them to, you know, turn around and leisurely jog off the field.
What a terrible job, right? Just the worst. I bet they're well compensated, though. Wouldn't you think?
I could think of worse jobs.
Anyway, the game was fine. Went back to the tailgate, did lunch at the tailgate, packed up, went back to the hotel, had a lovely dinner that night, and came back home. So it was a really nice weekend. It's been, 11 years, I figured out, since my last Penn State game.
Wow.
Yeah, it's insane. But it was a lot of fun. But I managed also, despite being at the game, to between my beloved IMG Learfield, college football blitz, and TV and the hotel bar or whatever, I saw a lot of college football. So I'm well informed coming into this podcast, Mike.
Well, that's a nice change for the listeners one of the hosts is well informed. I hear you had a good time to hang out at the hotel bar. Hotel bar, always a fun place to be, especially on a college football Saturday.
After going to the tailgate, you get yourself back to the hotel. Like, that's a pretty sweet spot to be, the hotel bar, right?
Definitely. You can relax. All your gear is packed away. You've beaten the traffic. You're home. You're at your home base. All you have to do is stagger up to your room. It's awesome.
All right. The week in review. A lot to review again, Mike. Number one, Alabama 20, Texas 19. I heard most of this on the radio. And then I watched a lot of the highlights afterwards. All due credit to Texas, because I don't think anyone, including you and me, like, not that we're experts, gave them a shot in hell of keeping this game even close last week. You know my longstanding thought on Texas, that they're just flat out soft. They were not soft in this game, Mike.
No, I watched most of this game, and their defense played phenomenally. Alabama's wide receivers just could not get open against the Texas defensive front, against the defensive backs, and they got pressure on Bryce Young. The whole game, Texas was playing their asses off. And then you couldn't write a script like the Texas has a kicker whose last name is Auburn. I could not believe it.
Yeah.
He hits a field goal to put them up by two. Immediately, my first thought, they've left too much time. And of course, Bryce Young does what Bryce Young does, why he won the Heisman, marches them right down the field for the winning kick. But tip of the cap to Texas. It'd be interesting to see if they can use this close loss as a springboard. I was reading today, I think it was Stuart Mandel's column on The Athletic, about how in the locker room afterward, you saw a lot more Texas players kind of upbeat about the way they played than down about a last second loss. So I thought that was interesting. That could break again. That could break either way. But some questions for Alabama. It was an excellent game, though. The weather looked really nice in Austin. There was a great crowd there, and it was just a cool noon game.
On your point, I've heard so much talk about this reaction of the Texans. Like, on one hand, you can see, like, hey, no one gave us a shot, and we were basically a play away. And a pretty bad face mask call that was not called, right, Mike? That could have changed.
There were a lot of bad calls, but at the same time, Alabama was whistled for 15 or flagged for 15 penalties, the most in the Nick Saban era. So I've read a lot of grumbling about how Alabama gets all the calls. Well, they don't get all the calls.
But that, I think it includes dating back to his LSU days.
Like, oh, really? Okay.
But don't you think Saban loves that? He got away.
Oh, yeah.
And he had 15 penalties to bitch about the entire week.
Oh, my God. The practice this week, I would love to be a fly on the wall.
But the whole thing with Texas, like, kind of like they weren't celebrating, but they were like a little bit too happy as Texas mm-hmm. to almost win. And we all know this. Look, they're playing UTSA this week, who's not bad. And if Texas starts feeling like, oh, we're really good because we almost beat Alabama, that's a classic trap game. Like,
is it UTSA is a tough out for anybody.
Yeah.
This is a very, very bad position for Texas. I agree with you there.
Speaking of a tough out, Appy State 17, Texas A&M 14. So we have kind of our core group on this show. We have a little pick'em type thing, Mike. And I was going through doing my picks last week, and I paused for a second on this game. And I was like, so much hype on A&M. And where's the actual product? And then we saw Appy State last week come within a whisker of beating North Carolina, right? And I'm like, wouldn't this be a classic Appy State win over an A&M team that's getting way too much hype for what they deserve? In the end, I did not press the button. I pressed A&M. Is there a program you respect more in this country than Appy State, given what they have and what they accomplish?
How about game day going to Boone? I know we'll talk about game day a little later, but Boone looks like a beautiful place to watch a football game. Props to our noted listener, Ryan Tozier, down there in Smyrna, Georgia. Sent us his stat. I've been seeing it float around, but he's the first one to send it. Kevin Sumlin's record in his first 50 games, 35-15, and Jimbo, 36-14. So one game off. I can't remember which one was, whether Sumlin was up one or Jimbo was up one, but essentially the same record in their first 50 games.
I think I heard today they've not won. I could be wrong. I could, the date's wrong here. Either the last time they were ranked number one was 1959, and the last time they won a national – no, maybe they won their last title in 59. But whatever, it's kind of like analogous to Texas, where it's like we put them on this pedestal, but the results have not really ever been there, right? Yeah. I mean, in our lifetime, Mike, who has been – because I have someone in my mind, and my dad's thinking the same person. In your mind, who was the most successful coach at Texas A&M in our lifetime?
Jackie Sherrill, right?
I think J.C. Slocum.
R.C. Slocum.
R.C. Slocum, yeah.
Yeah. Kevin Sumlin, by the way, was the one who was 36-14. Jimbo's 35-15 in his first 50. So that's a fascinating stat.
But, again, A&M, I think they gave Jimbo that ridiculous extension. So
he has a $95 million buyout, I read today.
96? It's $96 million buyout.
If someone buys that out, something is very, very wrong with our country.
Marshall 26, number 8, Notre Dame 21. I saw this most second half of this game.
Yes, yeah, so did I.
I'll start with this. Coach Huff at Marshall, I heard him interviewed yesterday morning on it wasn't full ride. It was a show before that, the morning show or whatever. So this guy, I was watching the game. I was like, oh, this guy's so impressive, so calm, composed. Definitely you could tell his players were playing hard for him. I'd forgotten he was Saquon Barkley's tailback coach at Penn State back in the day. Then he went to coach for Nick Saban, and he coached, one of their star running backs. I'm blanking on his name.
Derrick Henry?
It may have been Derrick Henry. I mean, they had so many, right? You can, like, one of those guys. But I heard him interviewed. You can tell the influence that Nick Saban had on this guy, because it was legit all about the process and, hey, telling his players like, hey, I know you put up with this crazy head coach and all the stuff I put you through. And there's sometimes like there's no light at the end of the tunnel. But a moment like that is a validating moment for what we're trying to accomplish here. Such an impressive interview. And I'm like, oh, that guy's got a bright future. What a win for him. Another thing I'll say too is this. Marshall, in the fourth quarter especially, physically dominated Notre Dame. No question.
Yeah, they look like the absolute better team. There's no doubt about it. If you had reversed the uniforms, it would have spoke more to the narrative that we expected going in, because Marshall looked like the better team. And to what you talked about, I listened to his post-game interview right after they won the game on NBC, and he was cool, calm, and collected. And he talked about the tradition and history of Marshall football.
Yeah.
And what a, you know, what a great history they have of playing well. And I love that. He didn't even talk about Notre Dame really. And he treated it like, obviously he was excited, but he had such poise in that interview too. I came away from that especially impressed with him as well.
Just a great win for Marshall, but wow. On Notre Dame real quick.
0-3 for Marcus Freeman.
And look, when Freeman was tapped, it seemed like there was universal agreement in the Notre Dame family that this was the right guy. When Kelly left, everyone said Freeman was the reason why a bunch of guys didn't leave with him, including some coaches, right? By all accounts, a much respected mind in college football or whatever. And look, it's early days. It's three games, including two tough ones. It's hard to judge the guy, right? But look, we know Notre Dame is a unique pressure cooker. I'd put it along, like the expectations there, fair or not, are up there with like the top SEC schools and USC and Ohio State, et cetera. It's not really a job you would generally think of as, hey, let's put a first-time head coach in there. And as a head coach, we all know this too, you can be a great coordinator. You can be a great recruiter. But when you're the one answering for all the nonsense, that's a whole different thing, right? And the only one in our lifetime, again, that like Notre Dame tried as a first-time college head coach, Mike, do you know who this was?
Was it Jerry Faust?
Jerry Faust, who came to speak in my Spanish class in high school because at the time he was the coach at Akron after being fired at Notre Dame. And Jerry Faust was a good coach, but like that's a tough first head coaching job, man. That's tough.
Extremely. And now it gets even tougher because at 0-2, not being in a conference, what do they have to play for? It's over. They're not going to the playoff and they have no conference title to play for. So as you like to point out all the time, it's made even more difficult by the fact that they're an independent. So this is a very, very, very dangerous situation for Marcus Freeman starting his coaching career. It's a must win against Cal this Saturday.
Is it at Cal or at home?
It's at Notre Dame, but you know, Cal's Cal. They're a Pac-12 team.
And you just have to wonder too, like what's the atmosphere going to be like? And like, let's say Cal scores in their first drive. Can you imagine?
Oh my God. People are going to be heading for the exits in the stands.
There's nothing more fun than if you're like, you're the visiting team at an away game and your team does that thing and the grumbling from the home fans is so classic, isn't it?
Like, yeah, especially the old timers.
Number 21, BYU 26, number 9, Baylor 20. I did pick this game correctly in our pick 'em. Again, BYU, I'm kind of like, why would you ever play them? Right?
Yeah. Well, they're barreling toward the Big 12 when they head into that conference, whenever that happens. I really desperately wanted to see this, to watch this game, and it seems like it was an awesome game, but I did not get to see it.
They're the kind of program too, like there's a commitment there from the institution to be excellent at football. And when they're in that league, they're going to put some money behind that program, Mike.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And there was a list, I believe, was it Pat Forty? He today wrote about the kind of the nicest stadiums and settings in college football and the crappiest ones. And BYU Stadium was right up there among the nicest that he said, the setting near the mountains in Provo. So interesting. They've got a lot going on. They're going into Oregon this weekend, which should be a very, very interesting matchup.
Real quick, no, I'm not sure you saw the game. I certainly did it. Number 10, USC 41, Stanford 28. Early signs pretty good at USC, Mike.
Yeah, well, so this was on TV3 down in my basement, so I had kind of one eye on it. Every time I looked up, it did seem like USC was scoring in spectacular fashion. Not only do they have Caleb Williams at quarterback, who's quickly emerging as a Heisman contender, but they also brought in Mario Williams at wide receiver from Oklahoma and some other transfers from big-time schools. So there's a lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball. And look, Lincoln Riley can coach. That's why they went out and paid what they did for him. And that's why the USC boosters and athletic department were so excited to get him. So that's a nice win for USC. Again, only two games in, but they're looking like they have the talent and the skill positions like USC used to have.
But they got a great quarterback and they got like 17 all-star wide receivers. They're going to be a handful. Number 20, Kentucky, 26. Number 12, Florida, 16. Look, Florida last week was on cloud nine, right? They're feeling great. Their quarterback's a supposed Heisman candidate.
Yeah, Anthony Richardson. Everyone was falling all over themselves about him.
I mean this most sincerely. You look at the totality of the work he's achieved at his current program, what that program has been historically, and the opportunities he's had to go elsewhere. You have to think about Stoops, Mark Stoops, as one of like, what? You can make a case. He's one of the top 10 coaches in this country. What he's the winningest coach in the history of Kentucky, surpassing Bear Bryant.
Yeah, what a great stat that is.
He's built, they're a legit, solid, good. You can expect now 9-10 wins at Kentucky. Amazing.
And they play such good defense and they play such physical football. It's they're really a fun team to watch. It was a great win for them going on the road. You saw a little bit of a letdown by Florida. But Richardson, who looked like a superstar against Utah, which was a supposed top 10 team, couldn't really do much against that Kentucky defense. So unfortunately, Kentucky's in the East, right? So they have a little bit of a wall to get through, wall named Georgia. But you can see 10 wins again for the Wildcats, no problem.
I mean, there's been so many names floated for the Nebraska job.
Yeah, just going to bring that up.
And it's like, I think Stoops is comfortable there. I think the school likes him. He could like just coach out his days there and retire. But to your point, he's in an impossible division. And then it's like, oh, hey, you were able to build this thing at Kentucky. In theory, we have a slightly better big picture situation here at Nebraska, and we're in a horrible division, especially.
Yeah, horrible.
I would not be shocked if they approached him or if he took it.
I also wouldn't be shocked if the Big Ten gets rid of divisions eventually, sooner rather than later.
It's pretty bad right now, isn't it? It's just, it's a mess.
Everybody lost this week.
Oh, so bad. Number 24, Tennessee, 34. Number 17, Pitt, 27. Another entertaining game.
Awesome game.
All due credit to Pitt. What, they had the Mountaineers and now Tennessee back-to-back their first two games?
Yeah, and both games were had very nice crowds at Heinz Field or whatever it's called now. And it really felt like you were watching college football, which is something you never felt watching Pitt play at that NFL stadium before. Tennessee with Hendon Hooker has got an awesome offense. Josh Heupel is an exciting play caller. But Pitt with Pat Narduzzi and the way that they play physically on defense, it was both – they look like legitimately two great teams going at each other. It was a crushing, heartbreaking loss for the Pitt plus 6.5 gamblers, of which you were one of them, Tim, yeah, on your lock, because it went into overtime and Tennessee won by 7. But it was a wildly entertaining game.
To your point on the atmosphere too, there's one guy – you must give credit to, and that's Pat Narduzzi. He's done a great job at Pitt, right? I mean,
yep,
that was a wasteland for a long, long time. He recruits extremely well. He challenges James Franken for in-state talent, and he sells kids on Pitt. And again, I was texting, again, Cousin Dave didn't like it as a Mountaineer fan, but you watch Pitt, those kids play hard. They do.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He seems, we always talk about fit. He seems like the right fit for Pitt.
Absolutely. Unranked Washington State 17, number 19, Wisconsin 14. The aforementioned Big Ten West, an absolute mess. I don't know a single thing about Washington State. I did peruse some Wisconsin, the Madison State Journal or whatever, and the panic over this program right now is just wildly entertaining, Mike.
It's rightful panic. I mean, they can't do crap on offense. They look like Iowa, a little bit better than Iowa. Maybe we'll get to the Iowa game, but I watched much of the second half of this game, and Washington State played great defense. They were fired up. That new Washington State coach, by all accounts, is doing a tremendous job. They have this quarterback, Cam Ward, who is a transfer who made play after play after play, but with both his arm and his feet in the fourth quarter. And Washington State just seemed like the tougher team, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, so in the early days, but man, Big Ten West is a mess. Texas Tech 33, number 25, Houston. Here for one reason, because I also picked this one correctly, Mike. Do you know anything about Texas Tech or Houston?
0.0.
All right, moving on. Maryland 56, Charlotte 21. Maryland 2-0, right, Mike?
Maryland 2-0. They're scoring a ton of points. They haven't played anybody, but their offense, which is supposed to be the strong point of their team, has shown up big time in their first two games. So they have a little bit more of a test this week against SMU coming into to Maryland Stadium.
I didn't watch a ton of Maryland last year, Mike. So one of the guys, there's no era of the transfer portal or whatever. You can get an impact player in your team, like, all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the most impressive defensive player for Penn State last week was a guy named Chop Robinson, who played for Maryland last year. A phenomenal player. He's good.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. Maryland has possibly the best set of wide receivers in the entire Big Ten, maybe outside of Columbus. But and Talia's been slinging it all around. So the offense is clicking, but we need to see him against some better competition. By the way, Tim, that was Washington State's first ever win over a ranked Big Ten team on Saturday.
Wow. Iowa State 10, Iowa 7. Again, it's on our list. I got to see this game someday. Congratulations to Cyclones. The level of desperation for Iowa fans watching this horrific offense right now. I mean, I could be wrong. I think I saw that Petrus's QB rating, I think it's in the single digits at this point.
Well, I watched much of this game, and Iowa did not have a play, an offensive play of more than 11 yards until their desperation final drive. And I think they got one for 13 or possibly 17. But before that drive, it was 11. Putrid offense on both sides. Let's not forget about Iowa State as well. They both play good defense. There was, of course, special teams and turnovers factored in. It was a classic Cy-Hawk matchup. But the game, again, should have been over. I don't know what Iowa State Matt Campbell was thinking, throwing the ball on their last drive, stopping the clock, giving Iowa one more chance when they really didn't have to. That's the second week in a row we've seen multiple teams do that. But congratulations to Matt Campbell, who struggled historically in his career at Iowa State in September before turning it on in October and November. So this was a much-needed win for the Cyclones.
I'm pretty sure that Iowa's longest scoring drive of this season is 16 yards.
Yeah, that was this game, I think, after a turnover.
I mean, it's a mess. I mean, and there's no fixing it. They have no talent on offense.
Well, also, do you know why? Because their offensive coordinator's last name is Ferentz, right?
This never works. This never works.
Nepotism? Yeah, almost never.
Illinois 24, UVA 3. Just want to say Illinois off to a decent start.
Only one blemish on their record, and that's to the Hoosiers.
Indeed. But if you're Illinois, this kind of win is like, yeah, we beat Virginia on the road, actually, I think. I could be wrong.
No, it was in Champaign. But yes, that's a huge – any win for a team like Iowa or Indiana is huge, as we'll get to when we talk about the Hoosiers maybe briefly.
Finally, Indiana 35, Idaho 22, Mike.
Well, I'd prefer to start with the halftime score, Idaho 10, Indiana nothing.
Okay.
Which was, and first of all, I wonder what the attendance to this game was. It was delayed 35 minutes due to a downpour and lightning. There were probably a few thousand people in the stands when the game started. Indiana did not show up, but to their credit, they came out. Tom Allen, according to accounts, really ripped them in the locker room, and they came out and took care of business. They scored 29 unanswered points, but it was an ugly first half for the Hoosiers. They could barely get any first downs on offense. But they turned it around, and again, any win's a nice win. So IU, after going 2-9 last year, will certainly take 2-0 to start this year.
And next week you have who?
Next week we have Western Kentucky coming in. So that's another tough game for a program the caliber of Indiana's.
And these days, again, you don't know what you're getting with these mid-level teams because they're
correct. And Western Kentucky is historically they've been very good. They've always been a good team. IU played them down in Kentucky. Last year, that was one of our two wins, but we only won by about, I think, 6 points.
Yeah, so we'll see. All right, Mike, the top 25, you ready?
Let's do it.
We're doing AP. Drop from rankings. Notre Dame, oh my God, from number 8 in the country to?
Out of the top 25. That's a historic plummet.
No, there were 5 in week 1. There were 5.
Yeah, top 10, or top 5, okay. Top 5 to out in 2 weeks. Yeah, that's historic.
Wisconsin and Houston. Others receiving votes. Marshall got 85. Appy State got 80. Our beloved Oregon State got 42. Notre Dame got 23. Purdue got one vote, Mike.
Purdue got a vote?
Yeah, why not?
I wonder who did that. It's probably someone from West Lafayette.
All right, 25 Oregon, 24. A&M still ranked. Still ranked.
That's surprising.
Fell 18 spots, but still ranked. 23 Pitt. Kind of unfair, I think. Especially because number 22 is Penn State. Whenever you see, like, this happens all the time. It's the same in-state reporter voters voting for these in-state teams. They're always grouped, right. Always grouped together. 21 Texas. 20 Ole Miss, 19 Wake Forest, 18 Florida, 17 Baylor, 16 NC State, and 15 Tennessee.
Interesting. Interesting that Wake Forest is in there at top 20. They got Brian Hartman, their quarterback, back. I picked against him in the lock of the week, and he had a huge game, four touchdowns. Looked like he didn't miss any time. So they're a dangerous team.
We got 14 Utah, 13 Miami. Looking good so far this year, knock on wood. 12 BYU, 11 Sparty, and 10 Arkansas. Who looked at this week too?
Oh, I love Arkansas. They've been the best looking team against the toughest opponents when you consider both the two opponents that they've had.
Number 9 Kentucky, 8 Oklahoma State, 7 USC, 6 Oklahoma, and 5 for the Compadres, Clemson.
Interesting. Oklahoma ranked at 6. What kind of Oklahoma team is this? We still don't know, and that seems like a pretty high ranking for a team with so many question marks.
And here's one I question, and look, we'll see what happens. For Michigan, I have serious doubts about, Mike.
J.J. McCarthy, as we talked about last week, the new starting quarterback, everyone kind of knew it was coming. He had a big game against Hawaii, but anyone would have. But that's the guy Harbaugh wants running that offense.
3 Ohio State, 9 Bama, 1 Georgia. Georgia with 53 first-place votes, Bama with 9, and Ohio State with 1. Right now, it does seem the national narrative is that Georgia is the team, although they are going to a location this week that has not been historically kind to Georgia. And I'm sure Brian and the Georgia fans, even as good as they are, have a little part of them that is nervous about this week, Mike.
Yeah, but I would not be. This is a different Georgia team, and it's a different South Carolina. Well, it's always the same kind of South Carolina team, but it's a different Georgia team.
Yeah. All right, quick topic change. I alluded to it last week, and I hate having to bring this up because I've been a longtime defender of game day. We've said on this show for years and years, like, at its peak, I thought it was, like, legit, and I think you agreed. It was, like, one of the best shows on television. It was just a wonderful celebration of everything we loved about college football. It was, like, for the idea of going to campus was, it sounds dumb now, but, like, that was revolutionary. Like, oh, we're taking the show to a college campus to show the national audience what this place is like, right? And you had guys in that show, Fowler, chief among them, of course, Lee Corso, Herb Street, who just exuded, like, love for the game, right? You had the Tom Rinaldi spots or whatever. I've never minded Desmond, but now they're bringing in this whole rotating cast of characters, okay? And it's definitely, like, am I wrong here? It's turning into, like, this, it's like showbiz now, and, like, football becoming, like, less and less the focus of the show. We're not getting the analysis we used to get from these guys. And for me, who was the rapper on week one? I never heard of the dude.
Well, that's not a good barometer whether you've heard of a rapper, Tim.
But, like, why are we having a rapper perform at game day? Like, it's not the point of the show. It never has been.
Yeah, it's definitely, you can sense it morphing. I think some of it is they're phasing out Lee Corso, of course, which is sad, but it probably needs to happen. But you're completely right in that they're turning it into more of an event type show than really a football preview show. And I've noticed it in previous years. This is a kiss of death for me. The fake laughter.
The fake laughter on set is going out of control.
And that is a hallmark of all the incredibly terrible NFL preseason shows or pregame shows on Sunday, which I don't watch anymore. But if you do accidentally catch them, they're all fake laughing about what they couldn't even tell you what they're supposedly laughing at. I've noticed a lot more of that on game day.
That's almost my biggest pet peeve. It's like, why are you laughing so much? Like,
yeah, there's not, no one's even made a joke. are you going to be switching over to Fox is the real question.
I mean, there's part of me, it's like, oh, it's such a core of like my college football life to watch game day.
Yeah.
I despise that opening song. It's so bad. It's so bad. Can we please drop that song, Mike?
Well, the song is the least of my complaints. I do love the job that Urban Meyer used to do on Fox Big Noon. Is he coming back? I believe he is coming back, right? To that show. So he is, say what you will about his personality, he's extremely well-spoken on television, and he can explain the X's and O's better than most.
I mean, he's a very unlikable person.
No doubt about it.
But again, they actually do talk football on that show, right? Yeah. They do. It's what's the panel? It's Matt Leinart,
Reggie Bush,
who's really, I think Reggie Bush is really good. That one year they had Bob Stoops, right? Is he still there? Or
yeah,
no?
No, they have what coach they have there now? It's another coach, of course, who's occupying, who just recently been fired. I can't remember here. I'll try and Google while it's you.
It's like, I'm not being grumpy old man, or somewhat I am. It's just a better.
Yeah, you show. Are a little bit.
It's a better show, and I hate what Game Day is doing to like what their legacy was. Last question on this. No one has the answer for this. What do you do with Corso?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, do you think Pat McAfee is going to improve this situation or not? I think we all know the answer.
He made the laughing worse last week, so I'm like not on McAfee's. No.
So I'm all for them starting the show with Corso and then bringing him back for the picks. I love the guy. You don't want to bump somebody off a show, but he really hurts the pacing of the show now. You know what I mean? And it's painful kind of to watch him struggle so much. Now, look, not the biggest deal. He likes it. Everybody likes it. It's fine. But it does hurt the pacing of the show. But once he goes, the headgear goes too. There's no way someone else can start doing the headgear. They won't have the personality for it.
And I think it'd be almost disrespectful that was his thing. Right?
Yeah, exactly. It'd be sacrilege. He came up with it. He perfected it. And I think it should retire when he does.
Do something else. Right. Whatever else. Maybe, Mike, you could be on the show.
We should get Spurrier. Spurrier could come up with something fun for the show. Or Les Miles. Ed Orgeron.
Spurrier would be a great addition to the show. He would be great.
I don't think he wants to. Stop playing golf, though.
There's that as well. All right, games of the week. Number one, Georgia at South Carolina. Noon ESPN, the aforementioned game. You seem unconcerned, and I get it. Georgia's way, way better. But it's been a house of horrors for them, I think, Mike.
It has, but I think they'll know that going in. They're 24.5-point favorites in Columbia there. I don't know if they'll cover that number, but I'm confident Georgia will win. Bold prediction there.
What the line of this game is. Number six, Oklahoma at Nebraska, noon, Fox. We didn't mention Scott Frost. We should have mentioned this earlier. Mike, feel free to chime in. I feel like Trev Alberts had no choice at this point. It was so bad. They had given the guy, what, 4+ years at this point? It was not going to work.
He was in year five.
I think Scott Frost knew he was done. His quote after the game last week, did you see it?
No, what did he say? Well, I saw the end of the game, and it was unbelievable how Georgia Southern, again, they look like the better team. They look like they wanted the game more, and they look like they were the more talented team.
His quote after the game, I'm paraphrasing here, was, they came in here and out-schemed me, and I didn't have an answer. I'm like, dude, head coach making $4 million a year. Even if it's true, don't say that.
Yeah, that's why you alluded to the fact, because I was a little bit surprised at the timing, because just 18 days from now, his buyout goes from $15 million to $7.5 million. It seems like he could have waited. Nothing's going to happen in this season anyway. But to your point, he seemed to have waved the white flag, and who knows how many season tickets and donations and such you could lose if you didn't jump off the Scott Frost bandwagon after he loses at home to Georgia Southern. Oklahoma comes in as a 10.5 point favorite on the road. As I alluded to earlier, Oklahoma, team we really know nothing about, have no idea how Nebraska is going to react to their interim coach. So I would either stay away from this one, or I'd probably take Nebraska in the points at home.
10.5?
Yeah.
I mean, Nebraska's a broken – what are they playing for at this point? Like,
you never know how they're going to react to a new coach.
Bunch of transfers who came to play for Scott Frost who all of a sudden are like, who's this new guy? I mean, it's not a good situation.
It's definitely not a good situation. I'll agree with you there.
This one, because I feel like this could be – these two teams could have their own conference and just play every week, like one week in Syracuse, one week – let's play it. How about Purdue at Syracuse, noon on ESPN2, Mike?
You get just as much sun in the Carrier Dome as you do in an average game in West Lafayette. The Boilers, 1.5-point road favorites against 2-0 Syracuse, including a win over Louisville in those two. Yeah, this is excellent comment, because you have two bottom third teams in their respective conferences who play in these foreboding, out of the way towns that most people have not been to, nor do they have a desire to go to. But it will, for that reason, it could be a little bit of a fun game to watch. Boilers 1.5-point road favorites. I'll take the Cuse at home.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, why not? Hey, Purdue.
I'm all on Purdue. Also, back-to-back, could also be their own conference. Rutgers at Temple, noon, ESPN Plus.
Rutgers, Temple, and who are we kidding? Pitt could be in there too. Rutgers is a 17.5-point favorite. I assume this game will be at the Eagles Stadium. There'll probably be lots of Rutgers fans there. Again, Rutgers 2-0. They're part of that triumphant in the Big Ten East with Maryland and Indiana gets off to the hot 2-0 start. So, again, seems like a lot of points, but I think I'll take Rutgers minus the 17.5 in this one.
Number 12, BYU at number 25, Oregon, 3:30 Fox. Kind of a fascinating game here.
A fascinating game and a fascinating line. I was very surprised to see Oregon 3.5-point favorites against BYU, a team that has owned the Pac-12 over the last 2 years, 5-0 against the Pac-12 last year. Oregon, the last time we saw them, they were getting thrashed by Georgia. You know, maybe they're not that bad. But BYU, known as a physical team, right? And Oregon, that's always one of the questions with them. Are they physical enough to play with the big boys? So I'll take BYU as the road dog, plus 3.5.
Number 22, Penn State at Auburn, 3:30 p.m. CBS. I will be done with soccer for the day. I'll be settled in, and I'll be totally relaxed for this game, Mike.
Are you ever totally relaxed?
Good question, Mike.
You'll be as relaxed as you get.
So it's funny. I mean, like, Penn State fans, like, we're 2-0, but they're grumbling. Oregon, Auburn fans, like, they weren't happy with their win last week. There are two very comparable fan bases where it's like they've had moments of success over the years, but also moments of the deep disappointment. It's a really interesting contrast here. It's way too early. I have no idea. Penn State has talent and spots. I didn't see Auburn play last week. I just know they're walking into a tough atmosphere, of course. I'm thankful it's not a night kick, which helps a great deal. What are your thoughts here, Mike?
Penn State, 3.5-point favorites on the road. It's a desperate Auburn team. You have no idea what's going on with Auburn. They've played nobody in their first two, I think San Jose State and was it Mercer, something like that.
Yeah.
Penn State, at least they're battle-tested with their win over Purdue. You got to think Penn State's the more talented team. The game was very, very entertaining last year up in State College. So you expect another close ball game. It's a 3:30 kick on CBS. I assume it's on CBS, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so I think it'll be a fun one. The whole country, most of the country will be watching it. Very tough to pick this one. I'd probably take Auburn and the points at home.
I would too. Texas Tech at number 16, NC State, 7 p.m. ESPN2. Interesting game here. And like, so credit to Notre listener Brian Slater, who did his homework last week and watched Oklahoma State, right, Mike?
Yeah, he did. Good for him. And they beat Arizona State. Nice win. Oklahoma State has an awesome. We're talking about Texas Tech, NC State, though.
I know. So my point is, I am giving homework this week to our audience to watch NC State.
Oh, okay. All right. Point taken. 7 p.m. kickoff. The Wolfpack 10.5 point favorites at home. Texas Tech 2-0 with a nice overtime win over Houston last week. NC State, of course, struggled in its opener. Really should have lost its opener to East Carolina. They pounded a patsy last week. So that's a lot of points, I think, for against a team, Texas Tech, that scores a lot. So should be an entertaining game with lots of points. Over-under is 55.5.
Again, I don't know much, but Washington, a lot of talk about Michigan State being clearly the best team in the Big Ten East. I'm dubious there as well. Number 11, Sparty at Washington, 7:30 p.m. kick, ABC. We've heard many times a tough place to play out there in Seattle. Again, so early in the season, no idea what to expect. I would not be shocked if Washington won this game.
Oh, of course not. Washington's actually favored by their 3.5 point favorites over Michigan State, courtesy of Rick Neuheisel, stat I heard today. Michigan State's last win west of the Rockies, 1957. Now, granted, they don't play there that often, but that's an eye-opening stat. Michael Penix Jr. has been slinging it all around for Washington. So as a few people have pointed out, he's used to playing Michigan State. He has a nice win over Michigan State in his career. So wouldn't be surprised if the Huskies won this one either.
And finally, this was an interesting. So I didn't include the late games because there's nothing compelling. But this one, to me, is kind of a pivot game for the season. Number 13, Miami at number 24, A&M. 9 p.m. ESPN. So Miami off to a great start, getting some good buzz. A&M, of course, on the opposite side of the spectrum. If Miami wins this game, they'll be elevated to like probably the top 10 next week and a legit ACC contender. If A&M loses, it's like the end of the world. If A&M wins, it's like, okay, things aren't that bad. It was a fluke, whatever. If Miami loses, there's not much there. So
you're absolutely that was a very good breakdown. I agree with all those points. If you're Texas A&M and you're Jimbo, what you say is like, look, we beat Miami. Then it's basically things look exactly as they did before the season. You're still going to have to essentially beat Alabama and win the West to secure your spot in the playoff. If they do that, if they beat Miami, if they beat Alabama and win the West and presumably win the SEC championship or possibly play well in it. I mean, that's way, way far down the line. All their goals are still there.
Yeah.
But if they lose, it's pretty much over for them unless they win the SEC. And you're right, Miami, this could be a we're back type of game for Miami if they go to College Station and win this one. They have this quarterback who everybody is raving about. And so that would be a fun one to watch, 9 p.m. kickoff.
Mike, our picks last week were what?
Tim, you had a heartbreaker. You took Pitt plus 6.5. They lost by 7 in overtime, dropping your record to 0-2. I took Vanderbilt at home plus the points. They did not cover against Wake Forest. As I mentioned, the Deacons look good. So I am 1-1.
Bobby hit the bumper.
Place bets on college football.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't gamble. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
The Mike Unger 50-50 possible lot, probable loser of the week.
Please hang up and try again.
For this week's Lock of the Week, we're going down to Raleigh, North Carolina, home of the Wolfpack. Texas Tech comes in, an interesting interconference matchup. You don't see these teams play very often. Texas Tech, we know they can score. They put up 33 and beaten Houston last week, a very, very good Houston team in overtime. North Carolina has a vaunted offense, but they should have lost to East Carolina. You know, it's dangerous going on the results of two games, but what else do we have to go on, Tim? I'm taking Texas Tech plus 10.5 against North Carolina State.
That's a great pick, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you. You don't normally say that. You normally say confidence. I say 4 and you giggle.
And again, the Sparty line is what?
Washington favored by 3.5.
I'll take Sparty to cover.
Ah, all right. You think they're going to break that? Well, they don't even have to win. That's right. Mel Tucker does seem to have them playing a different brand of football, but I really love the coach of Washington, whose name I always forget, is the former offensive coordinator at Indiana, with Michael Penix for one of those years. Then he went to Fresno, had a lot of success there. So I'm bullish on that Washington Husky program.
And again, it's a night kick there. It's yeah. Or would it be a night kick there? It wouldn't be. It'd be like an afternoon.
No, it's, you have to see what you have to do, Tim. You have to subtract 3 hours from the time that it says Eastern.
It'll be a night kick in the second half, maybe.
It'll be a night kick where you're watching home in Philadelphia. That's what's most important.
Your plans this weekend are what, Mike?
I am going to my friend's house on the eastern shore of Maryland for some boating and some pool time and some seafood eating and some college football watching.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, it's going to be delightful.
So I'm staying home. I'm looking forward to staying home.
Yes.
No big plans. I've got soccer until like 1 o'clock and then I'm free the rest of the day. So looking forward to a great, great weekend.
Oh, that'll be all. You'll be the informed one next week.
Indeed. All right, Mike, there is one thing to say.
Puchas.
Puchas.
Thank you for listening to the TCFA podcast. For more college football news and wit, visit Intel.